questions about your practice. If you did the optional homework, it could be questions about that. Anything at all. So first, anybody who didn't ask a question yesterday.
I have two questions, but I'll ask one first. And this was something that came up when you were speaking with Raging Volcano, because there was a lot that I identified with.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the necessity for a woman in order to communicate and meet her man, or, you know, show her man what's going on, to stay in the primary emotion.
Right.
And that's something that I don't know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the primary emotion doesn't even reach my consciousness, and I
yes.
go straight to, like, anger or rage.
Yes.
You know?
Well, now, sometimes anger and rage is the primary emotion. It just wasn't in her case in that moment. But
well, how do you know, you know, in either case, how do you know what the primary emotion is if I don't even let myself feel it, or it doesn't come? I can't stay there. I can't seem to stay there. And so, you know, I don't bring him the primary emotion. I don't even feel the primary emotion to get in touch with what's going on.
Right. That's a great question. To answer it, I need to back up just a little bit. Paint a picture, come back to the question. So the question, if everyone heard it, I'm assuming you did, how do you stay in touch with the primary emotion if you're not sometimes even aware of it in the moment? The first thing and the most consequential thing to feel is that what you just described is the female or feminine equivalent of a man who doesn't know his deepest purpose. So you will attract to you a man and evoke in your man his incapacity to feel his deepest purpose if you stay in the place of not knowing your primary emotion. They're the equivalent numbness, or the equivalent lack of certainty, or the equivalent weakness. I don't know what word to use. So another way of saying that is, until or unless you learn to contact that, you don't deserve, so to speak, I don't mean in a moral way, I mean just purely energetically, if a man were in his deep purpose, he would just leave you because you'd be totally boring to him because you weren't in your primary emotion. So you would be intolerable as a partner to a man who was rested in his deepest purpose, unless you were rested in your depth of emotion, your actual heart feeling in the moment. So that dynamic is the first part to feel, that every time you feel he isn't giving me blank, you know, he's lost, I have to direct myself, he can't direct us into the divine, he can't direct us financially, he can't direct us spiritually, whatever it is, unless you're in your deepest emotion at the moment, your primary emotion in the moment, of course he's going to be that way. You're actually forcing him to be that way, because if he was purpose, he'd look at you, feel you superficial, and say, bye. So the only way a man can be with a woman who's not in her primary emotion is either getting her in her primary emotion or getting superficial himself so he doesn't feel the intense dissatisfaction and pain that causes him, which would just make him leave. So that's one part of it. I know that's not your question, but I wanted to answer that for you. Now, how to get in touch with it is mostly a matter of bodily relaxation. So if your body, physically, you know, your muscles, your belly, your chest, your especially the front part of your body, your throat, your heart, and your belly, your vagina, the whole front, like the soft tissues in the front of your body, if they're tense, you won't be able to feel whatever you're feeling, because there are always bodily components to your emotions. And the primary emotion is usually, it's very deep, which means it's often very subtle. It is easy to miss, like you say. So when he does something, let me just say, he does something stupid or ignores you, or, I mean, to me, I mean, let's say I was you. I was his wife. I mean, every time he just goes like this and touches his head, I'd punch him in the face, personally. I mean, I wouldn't let him do that.
But what's the primary emotion?
In that case, it was anger.
It was anger.
Yeah. Because I'm angry, he's not living his deepest purpose in that moment. Mm-hmm. I can feel he's being superficial, and that angers me because I love him and I want his depth. So in that moment, my primary emotion is anger. It's, I love you too much. It's like a your children are home drinking bleach or something. You know, you walk into the utility room or whatever, and your children are there drinking bleach, and you just don't go, drinking bleach again. a bolt of, because you love them so much, a bolt, you go, no, and you grab the thing again. You might even take them and go, no, don't drink that. And then you hold them, I love you. It's, you love them so much that the urgency of your love moves you in anger to help their life. They're about to kill themselves. Well, every time he, stuff like that, that's equivalent to your kids drinking bleach. I mean, it's not as consequential in terms of life and death, but it's definitely less than he's capable of. So your primary emotion in that moment might be anger. And if you were totally relaxed in your body, you might immediately just smack him in the belly, or you might just go, shit, hurts. I don't know what you'd say. I mean, I'm not you, so I don't know exactly what it would evoke, but whatever it would. Now, on the other hand, if he goes to love you in some way, and then he kind of drifts off and he's walking out of the room, and it's not like he's doing something that angers you, but your heart wanted love, and now he's pulling away or he's distracted, then the first thing you might feel might be hurt. Like you have this open, vulnerable heart, and he's rejected you. You're you, so I don't know how you'd feel, but I'm imagining in moments like that for me, I feel hurt when I'm open and loving and my partner's unavailable or critical, say. Let's say my heart's really open and my partner, it's like, and it just hurts. And that moment is hurt. Like, I want to open in love with my partner, and my partner is hurting me with her sharpness or something. So in that case, my primary emotion would be hurt, and I might cry or just say, I'm really hurt, or that hurts me, or something like that. But the only way you can feel that is if the front of your body is relaxed enough so you can actually feel the pain in your heart that is hurt, or the urgency to love, which is anger, the urgency to, stop him from doing something stupid. So the relaxation and feeling in the front of your body is the primary way to feel primary emotions. If you're in your head, if you're thinking, there's no chance at all of ever feeling your primary emotion. So if you're attending to anything that's going on in your head in the moment, you'll miss your primary emotion. You need to feel into your body. And if your heart has that wounded, aching, sorrowful feeling of hurt, then that's hurt. If your body's wide open and your heart's wide open and the impulse to, comes up immediately, that's anger as a primary emotion. Now, within 2 seconds after whatever, I'm using the circumstance of him doing something that triggers you. After 2 seconds, it's already not the primary emotion. Whatever it is, it's not it. It has to be what is exactly, spontaneously, in that moment evoked. Because after that, it's your toxic residue from not expressing your primary emotion. So if he does something and you're not so relaxed and open that you just spontaneously smack him, yell, cry, whatever it is, smile, laugh, could be anything. If you don't, if instead you're thinking and you're holding back and you're waiting, it's already gone. The moment has passed. Whatever you expressed at that point is essentially the equivalent of your bowel movements. It's like stuff that's been in you and just needs to be let go of. It has nothing to do with serving him at that point. You've just got tension in you and or anger in you or something, and you just need to let it out. That you shouldn't. One needn't burden one's intimate partner with, because there's nothing he could do except say, okay, I'll eat your shit if you want, but there's no service in that. The service is in your utterly spontaneous, in the exact moment that it's occurring, response to what he's doing, moment by moment by moment by moment by moment. We'll be doing some exercises today to help you with that, but it's the capacity to moment by moment feel him and respond completely freely from laughter, orgasm, hitting him, yelling, crying, laughter. I mean, the whole range of any feeling. That is the primary emotion. And that's subtle and changing. It changes like that. So he might turn around from you at a stupid moment. You feel anger, and then he turns at you and looks into your eyes. You feel loved, and then he touches you in a certain way, and you feel swooned, and then he picks his nose or does some stupid thing, and you smack him, and he turns to you and smiles, and you feel happy. And so that's just an ongoing primary response to him, and that's what gives him something to see. The masculine, if he is doing his best to open you to the divine, to open your heart, to open your body. If he's doing his best to do that, let's assume he's trying in this moment. The only thing he has is your spontaneous in-the-moment response. As soon as you're no longer in the moment, and you're giving him residue from 3 minutes ago, he can't feel where you are now because you're expressing something from 3 minutes ago. It's like, well, in a second stage moment, you could sit down and talk, and you could say, you know, well, 3 minutes ago, I felt so-and-so. Yes, I hear you felt so-and-so. And sometimes that's useful, but it's not useful in the third stage practice. Third stage practice, like, how good is it for him to go, I was present with you 3 minutes ago? And he's like, fuck that. Who cares? That's not, you know, now is what counts. So he doesn't care what you felt 3 minutes ago. It's absolutely irrelevant. It's useless. Now, you might feel tension in you because you didn't express it, and you need to let it out. So go into the bathroom, shout, beat a pillow, do whatever you have to do to get it out. I would suggest not burdening your intimate partner with residue, but gift him with your spontaneous response in the moment, fully, by relaxing the front of the body and just giving him exactly what you're feeling with no censorship at all. But what you're feeling, not what you want him to do, which is very different. So just, ouch, you know, just constant feedback. And then he's able to regulate what he's doing with you in response to that because you're more sensitive to him. Remember, we were talking yesterday, men are kind of deaf, dumb, and blind. They're not sensitive. So he needs that exaggerated moment-to-moment response to fine-tune the way he touches you, looks at you, speaks to you, adjusts your life, makes plans, deals with the kids. He needs to feel that moment by moment so he can, you know, it's like he's driving an airplane and he's looking at all the meters, and you know, he needs that information from you constantly to navigate you open. If you're unable to give it, it's like the meters are just stuck, or the meters are showing where you were 3 minutes ago and he's going to crash. Does that help?
That does help,
yeah. Okay.
I mean, I need practice.
It takes time. It might take you months or years till you're really able to stay most of the time in that primary emotion. But just knowing it, feeling it, understanding it, you could begin now and just keep practicing it. Would that be good for you if she did that?
Oh, yeah. That would be great. That's exactly what I'm looking for, really.
Yeah.
Really?
See, he's remembering his practice, and I think you guys will lose it.
It's funny, but I really would love that.
Every man would. I mean, that's what men need and desire, your spontaneous and exaggerated response.
Well, that kind of gets to my second question, which maybe you don't want to answer it. It's just my own curiosity about the male, because you described that the bliss, you know, the edge for the male is emptiness.
Right.
You know? And yet, to me, it seems that the responsibility, you know, taking on that responsibility of navigating a female,
yes,
all that leading so far from emptiness, it's like,
yes,
it's a huge burden.
Yes.
Why? I mean, I don't know if I trust that any man or my man really has that, you know, generosity toward me, that he would want to do that with my interest, you know? I mean, that's what another area where I identified with raging volcano.
Right.
You know, if they're really going for emptiness, you know, how can they want to take on that responsibility?
Good question. The answer is, it's kind of like Jeopardy. I don't know, remember what the game show is or something.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, sorry, is that your final question? When the masculine is in the first or second stage in a moment, I mean, we all go moment to moment. So I'm in a first stage moment sometimes, I'm in a second stage moment sometimes, I'm in a third stage moment sometimes. I do my best to practice the third stage, but you know, there's sometimes I fail and I'm in a first stage moment. So these are moment to moment things we're talking about. So when the masculine's in the first stage, it seeks freedom in first stage ways. It feels trapped, it punches holes in walls, it tries to make a lot of money, it tries to do things that makes it feel free from the outside. When the masculine is in the second stage, it attempts to make itself feel free internally. So it goes into therapy, does inner child work, tries to solve philosophical understandings. It's trying to internally resolve dilemmas, conflicts, tensions, so that they feel free. You know, does all this kind of exercises, yoga, therapy. I don't know. Each person does it in their own way. They try to clear themselves to be free internally, instead of just seeking it an external, you know, like, I've got the house, I've got the car, I've got the money, and I still don't feel free, I must need therapy. Second stage, I'm going to go talk to a therapist, I'm going to meditate. All of those things are second stage. Now, in a third stage moment, what a third stage moment is you are grounded in freedom. That is, you are feeling... Bingo is a way of using shorthand, since we've all maybe experienced a moment of that. You're in bingo, or practicing to be in bingo. So a third stage moment is you're already free. Now. Okay? So in a third stage masculine person, I don't mean permanently, I just mean in a moment of a third stage moment. So if your partner is, you know, happens to be in a third stage moment, which he will be more and more if he's practicing, he no longer is trying to get free. All that's left is for him to create freedom in the world. In you. All that's left. He no longer needs freedom for himself. He's rested his freedom. Now it's his gift to give in his way, his unique way, to give the gift. And then the burden is actually the burden of so much freedom that the necessity is to press it into the world, to press it into his children, to press it into his woman. And by freedom, I mean bingo. The way you feel bingo will be love. So when he presses bingo into you, which to him is his freedom, you will feel total love. You will feel the bingo of absolute connection, and it will feel like total love. So the burden in the third stage is actually, he's so free, and let's say he feels you less free in the moment. It's that he goes, I need freedom, and therefore dealing with her is a burden. That's a first or second stage moment, which many men feel a lot of the time. The last thing I want to do is deal with her problems. The last thing I want to do is deal with her emotions, especially if, you know, just come back later when she's civilized, maybe even when she's asleep. That's, you know. So, but in the third stage moment, the feeling is, there's nothing I need at that fundamental level. I am free. I mean, freedom itself. It's not that I, as a person, am free. The feeling is, I am consciousness. I am infinite. I am openness. And he looks into your eyes and he feels that openness deep in your heart, lost in the storm of emotion. And he, from that place, is spontaneously moved to what him feels like creating freedom in your heart. But to you, what that will feel like is him entering your life and opening you in love. So what you just said is totally true for first or second stage in the moment, ma'am, that they won't want to deal with you. First stage men will just punch you out, you know, shut up, bitch. Second stage men will try to resolve it by talking about it. Now you're angry now. You know we've talked about this before, you know. Let's have 5 seconds of quiet breathing time. Breathe. And he's trying to resolve the anger because it is a burden to him. He'd rather you weren't so whatever, angry, crying, whatever it is. Third stage men, you could be bonkos, and he remains open in that bliss, if you would, of consciousness itself, and feels, okay, let me do my best to open you. Now, he will do his best to open you simply because he wants, that's all that's left for him to do, is open you, to open the world, to open his children, to give that gift in his way. You know, if you don't open after a while, he's going to find a woman who does. Because he has no interest in hanging around a situation that is not responsive to his gift. Now, how long that is varies. I mean, if you're closed, of course, it might be hours or days or weeks till you open. That's all within. But if he's with you, say, for 3 years, and 3 years of him actually practicing in this third stage, and he really is, let's say all your friends agree he is, you agree he is, you know, it's not like him just going, I'm in the third stage, and everyone going, yeah, you're full of shit, you know. I mean, but let's say he's really practicing. I mean, if after several years you just simply are afraid to be that open, it's an inappropriate relationship, because there are people and the world could benefit from his openness in a different way. It goes the other way too, if you're really open in love. But the two of you aren't anywhere near that decision point, because the two of you are learning. He's just learning to stay in that freedom and offer it, and you're just learning to feel your primary emotion and offer it. So, you know, if either of you actually get fairly stable, like spend 60% of your day in that openness, then give it several years and see what happens to your partner, and then there, you might need to make a decision, but I doubt it. I think the two of you are perfectly matched, is how it feels to me, in your inadequacies and in your potentials. Okay. Did that answer your question about why the masculine would do it? It wouldn't until the third stage. Only in the third stage does the masculine enter the feminine to open it, because there's nothing else left to do. Okay, questions from anyone now, even if you've asked questions, yeah?
And like me being single and practicing that, I doubt I'm going to have a third stage man here right away. But if he's kind of like conscious, can I do some? I mean, how you say don't, if he's not in third stage, he's not going to take it well. Did I hear that right?
What is your real question?
The real question is, can I apply that, being single, to with a man who I'm not sure where he's at yet? And
if you're asking that question, you are not in the third stage moment, and you will not be with a man who's in the third stage, and you will end up suppressing your emotion, and he will end up not really wanting you to be that emotional.
So what's the solution?
There is none. That's the answer. You know, if you have to ask that question, if you wonder, that means you're not in a third stage moment. Because if you're in a third stage moment, pardon?
I'm not there yet.
Yeah, so there's not a question. He won't like you being emotional, and if you're not in the third stage, you'll suppress your emotions. So everything's cool. I'm not sure what you're asking.
Isn't there a way to work towards that? Because you're not. It's kind of discouraging to be or not be in second stage.
Yeah, the way to work towards it's everything that we've done so far and we'll do for the rest of today. So you practice all, we've done maybe 30-ish different practices yesterday, small practices of different kinds, everything from standing groups to practices I've given people. Let's say that you're practicing those, whatever, six practices, let alone all the breathing and opening and gazing and bingo and things that we practice. So let's just say you're actually practicing those things. If a guy can't handle it, fuck him. Let him walk away. You don't want a man who can't handle that, do you? So there's no question. I mean, if you're practicing openness, he'll just say, whoa, and walk away, and you'll go, good riddance. Or he'll go, wow, I've never felt a woman who is this open. And he'll come closer. You know, he'll be drawn into that, and that's the kind of man you want.
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
That's good.
Yeah. Now, if you are really that open, you'll feel quite a bit of heart pain, because not a lot of people will be able to meet that. Not a lot of men will be able to meet that openness. So more often than not, you'll have men essentially rejecting you. Because they can't handle that openness. So any man who's predominantly in the first or second stage, which is, you know, 99% of the people on earth, won't want that fullness, because they won't be grounded in consciousness enough to handle it. So your heart will feel the pain of not being met. There'll be some loneliness, some genuine loneliness, some genuine yearning. You know, yearning for a man who could meet that openness. And that's a kind of, in a sense, a good kind of suffering. I mean, it's genuine love yearning that will be It's just the nature of the heart that is unmet. It's genuine yearning, and that's good. It doesn't feel comfortable all the time, but that's just the way it is in the third stage. That you rarely meet people who can meet your openness. So as long as you're ready to live with yearning rather than closure and dissatisfaction, which are different, so you can stay open with the Lord penetrating you and apple pie saturating you and offering that apple pie Lord gift to the universe, and then find out who can meet you. Not a lot of people, but those who can are the kind that you really, really want, and those who can't aren't the kind you want to spend a whole lot of time with anyways.
Yeah. Last night in the last exercise, I felt like I had a big opening, and part of it was realizing how deeply I believe that I can't have what I want mm-hmm. in a relationship, and there's a lot of pain with that, and I just would like some help with how to shift that belief, that assumption.
The way to shift it is to be with what you're feeling, which is the pain of not having what you want, that you're feeling. Just stay open in that pain. I think while you were feeling it yesterday, who was it? Somebody, was it Secret Masturbator? Who said, that's very beautiful? Oh, yes, that's right. Sorry I Killed. Said something. Didn't you say something like that?
It's very beautiful.
Yeah. And it is. It is beauty itself. When a woman expresses her primary emotion, it doesn't matter what it is, it is beautiful. That is what beauty is, that openness of heart, that vulnerability. And it is shifted in that moment, what you're talking about. Even if the belief goes on in your head, which it may, maybe it was instilled as a child, this was just like a tape that'll keep playing, but if you can just stay open in that primary emotion, which you did last night and you're feeling now, your radiance shows through the emotion. And the masculine finds that irresistibly attractive. He wants to dive in, he wants to embrace, he wants to meld with that openness. And then even though your head might be going, I'll never get what I want, I'll never get what you want, suddenly all this
I also noticed there's a lot of shaking in my body. It was different from the leg shaking mm-hmm. earlier exercise. Just a lot of, that happens sometimes, this trembling and shaking.
That's fine too. Most people, I mean, that's an open body. But open bodies do all kinds of strange things. Especially when things are moving through you, energies are moving through you, old feelings perhaps that haven't been released are moving through you, that come through in different ways. And that also is very beautiful and vulnerable, just to feel a woman's body that open. Instead of, it's very, very attractive. In general, you're most open when you feel the worst. In general, especially near the early stages of practice, like the first 15 years of practice, say, or something. When you open, you feel the pain that you've been resisting and feeling all of your life. So usually what happens when you open is you feel all the things you've been avoiding feeling all of your life. But everyone else feels it as openness. So people are saying, you're beautiful, you're glorious, you're radiant, I'm so connected. And you're going, I feel like shit, I feel like shit, I feel like shit. That changes eventually, but it takes quite a while because of the years of, like you say, beliefs, you know, suppression in the body. It's all going to come up, and so you're going to feel like, ugh, and everyone's going to go, yeah, it's beautiful. You're going to be going, ugh, you know, yeah, it's beautiful. And it really feels uncomfortable and strange, all the things you've been resisting all of your life. So this is a good opportunity to let them come up. This is a good, you know, here we are, that's what it's for.
I'll just keep on.
Well, as long as it lasts, I mean, you don't need to dramatize it, but when it's spontaneous and real, let it be full, you know, let it happen. And when it's done, let it be done, let the next thing come up. Okay. Yeah?
I have a question from yesterday about my purpose for being here. I've been thinking here, I was going to ask it, and it's. I'll probably ask it different now, because I would have asked it using my blunt needle. But it, really the essence of it is that I'm scared that I'll never live or find my higher purpose.
You may not.
But I've always known, at least since I was a little kid, that I had one.
Then your purpose is to find your higher purpose. So living your life in the way that it takes for you to feel you are doing everything possible to discover your highest purpose is now your highest purpose. So what would that be? Do you need to go to a monastery? Do you need to be in nature? Do you need to have people punching you in the belly? Do you need to be in men's groups? Do you need to have sex more? I mean, what would help you discover your highest purpose? What context, what environment, what relationships? And that is your highest purpose until that brings fruit to whatever's next.
When you don't know, how do you go about discovering that? When you're not sure.
I could give you hints on where to start. I mean, you have to feel what works for you. You know, again, these are like arts. You know, I could teach you how to combine colors and how to paint and outlines and so forth. But to make art, you have to actually do it and feel it for yourself and find your own way. But to begin with, the masculine discovers its highest purpose, as I've said before, at the edge of death, in the face of challenge, in austerity and isolation. So, you know, Jesus spent 40 days and 40 nights in the desert. The masculine finds its highest purpose, usually alone facing death. So the thing to do first, you know, I'll start from kind of where you are and then walk and you go, okay, that's as far as I'm willing to go. And, you know, we'll see where that is. So the first thing would be to eliminate all comforts in your life. All comforts. Because any moment that you are buffering, it's intensely painful not to know your highest purpose, right? I mean, it is the core pain in the masculine. It's much more a core of pain than a bad relationship. If you know your highest purpose and you're living it completely and your relationship sucks, it's like, so what? You're living your highest purpose, right? But if you have the most incredible relationship in the world and you don't know your highest purpose, life sucks. It's like a collapse into the black hole. So the most painful thing that the masculine can feel is not knowing your deepest purpose, what you're doing on earth, what your life is for, where you're going, what gifts you have to give. You know, all of those things are the most painful thing for the masculine to feel. Yes? So anything you do to assuage that pain, to cover it over, to mollify it, to console it, prohibits you from discovering your highest purpose. Every moment you are sitting in your car and you just turn on the radio to listen to music and you don't know your highest purpose, in that moment you are preventing yourself from feeling the pain that would drive you to discover your highest purpose because you're mollifying it by listening to the radio. So, no listening to the radio, no listening to music, no reading newspapers, no reading magazines, no watching television, no masturbation, no drinking coffee in the morning. Well, I mean, everyone has their little rituals of comfort, you know, like they're unique to everyone, but they're things like, you know, either the morning cup of coffee and a newspaper or coming home at night and watching TV and or I don't know what yours are, but everyone has a set of consolations. Yeah, I mean, we all share a lot of them, so they're easy to pick. But you also have your little secret ones that you don't need to say, but, you know, the little secret things that you do to bring yourself pleasure, they could be anything, you know, weird-ass things, looking at pornography, having a little bottle of alcohol in your desk at work and when no one's looking, taking a little schnocker and just sitting back and relaxing. I don't know, you know, everyone has like a little secret ritual that they do that gives them a kind of secret pleasure. So what you do is you eliminate all of those. All of them. So your life becomes pure pain. I do not know what I'm living. This sucks. It is in that, that's like facing death because there's nothing worth I mean, it is so painful to be going through life not knowing your purpose, that when you don't console yourself, when you don't mollify it, when you don't distract yourself, when you don't spend your empty time doing blah, blah, blah and mollifying things, you just sit there going, what the fuck am I doing with my life? So, you know, you go, I don't know what your daily life is, but, you know, so you go to work, you come home, and you just sit there. You just sit there. Don't even sit on the comfortable couch. Just sit on a wood floor against the wall and just sit there and feel, I'm waiting for my highest purpose. And what will happen is you'll very, very shortly go, I got to have some beer over. Got to watch TV. Or you'll just start like looking over and reading the magazine. It's kind of across, you know, like just reading the cover of the magazine. You'll notice that you start doing things to distract yourself from the pain of not knowing your highest purpose. So the way the masculine finds its highest purpose is first by eliminating the consolations that you use to cover over the pain of not knowing it. And it's from that flame, that searing need to know because it's so painful not to know, that the vision of your higher purpose, or whatever word you want to use, comes from. It has no chance of emerging through the concrete of mollification. It can only emerge when that's released and the soil's all aerated and you're feeling the utter emptiness, the utter pain, the utter uselessness of being alive and not knowing your deepest purpose. It kills you. I mean, it hurts bad when you're not mollifying it over. So that's how you do it. Now, there are formal ways of doing it. The American Indians would go on vision quests. You know, they would go out by themselves in the forest. The Aboriginal Australians would go on walkabouts. So in many ancient cultures, young men, when they reached late adolescence, would go on vision quests or walkabouts or whatever it took, and some of them never returned. They actually died. You know, there's some tribes in Africa where, you know, you reach like 9 years old or 10 years old or 11 and you're a man, you have to go out and kill a tiger. But to do that, to face death that strongly, to be out alone in the wilderness, to have no guidance, is very similar to what I'm describing. It's like you're facing death. You're feeling the pain of your possibility. To go on a walkabout, you just wander in the outback of Australia, which is very austere. You don't have TV. You don't have newspapers. You don't have magazines. You don't have anything. You're walking around, you got like some stones stuck in your penis, and that's about it. I mean, that's what they do. That's not a joke. So, but you're supposed to laugh. Okay, thank you. So they're just walking around until they get a vision, and you know, to them it's coming from dream time, from a domain of where they get their visions. But every culture has their own way of the masculine character being in this intense austerity and isolation and discovering their deepest purpose. In our culture, you can go off and do that, or you can do it in the midst of everyday life simply by reducing all of the consolations. And then you're left with the same kind of quality one would have in the outback. So start there. Does that answer what you're asking? If you do that, I guarantee you that you will discover a deeper purpose than you're living now. You know, another version of it that somebody actually in this room has done before is you put up a tent in your backyard, if you have a backyard, I mean, and you just, there's nothing in the tent, and you just sit in the tent. And you don't leave the tent unless you're passionately moved to do something, which would be your deep purpose at the moment. So you just sit in the tent, and eventually you have to pee. And then it becomes your deep purpose to pee. So you leave the tent and you pee, and then you come back and you sit there. And then you just sit there, and at some point you get hungry. So you leave the tent and eat, and you come back in the tent. And you just sit in that tent with nothing unless you're deeply moved. Then at some point, you will find, I mean, it might be a day, a week, a month, that you are deeply moved to blank, to play with your children, to write a novel, to start a business, to go to South America and help people who are in trouble, to, I don't know what it would be, but you'll discover by sitting in that tent what deeply moves you. Because you're not filling your life with stuff that mollifies it otherwise. So that's another version of the same practice. Okay? It's the way to unblunt your needle.
If that's how a man finds his higher purpose, what does a woman do?
You find your higher masculine purpose in exactly the same way. So the masculine part of you finds your purpose in that way. But what I'm assuming you're asking is, how does the feminine part of you connect with your deepest core?
Absolutely.
So the feminine part of you, remember, is life force. Is the force of love and light itself. The feminine part of you is literally the motion, the fullness of light and love itself. It's all of life. So you open to that by allowing your body to conduct more and more and more of that force of light and love itself. So rather than going into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, I'll suggest, again, this, you know, it's an artful thing, you have to find your way, but I'll suggest a kind of range so you get the feeling of it. Let's say you get together with a group of your women friends and you all decide you all want to practice opening to your feminine as much as possible. So let's say there's 10 of you, roughly. So you go in, you bring a bunch of clothing of the kinds that you feel would most expose your life energy in ways you're holding back. Now, for most men and women, that's their dark side. So essentially, you'd bring, you know, some kind of long white gowns and fairy dresses, but a lot of slut clothes. So you'd bring fishnet stockings and sensual outfits and boas and jewelry and makeup and things that make you, your body feel totally full of energy, totally full of the most delicious living, so you feel like a juicy fruit or a flower just blooming open in total openness. I mean, well, I don't know what you'd need to wear to do that, but you bring that. Then you also bring clothes that would force other women to open. Like you just pick a woman, you know, I don't know, pick a lady here, pick her since she's sitting next to me. Okay, you take Raging Volcano. I see Raging Volcano in a see-through pink teddy with...
Yeah!
See how much life force that just liberated? Just saying it in the entire room? With black lingerie underneath that could be taken off in a moment. So you might tell her, here, put on the see-through pink teddy with this black lingerie. No way. You've just touched where she's holding back the expression of her life force. And so the group of you ladies, you sit down with her, maybe have some wine, some strawberries dipped in chocolate, put on your favorite music. And in this context of ultimate pleasure, where there's no excuse for not being pleasurable, you know, so the great music's playing, delicious tidbits of all kinds of food and sweets, maybe some delicious wines of various kinds, and you dress each other up in the way that everyone refuses to express their life force. Some of you would be, some women find it extremely easy to dress like sluts, but you dress them up like their mother dresses, and they go insane. So you say, dress like this, just what your mother would wear, and they go, no way, no way I'm putting that on. Well, that's a part of the spectrum of life force that they're refusing. You know, you'd say, we're going to smear this apple pie on your body, and that's all you can wear. She goes, no, no, no. And all the ladies are like, yes, yes, yes. And it's done as total love, total, but it's a demand for love. It's a demand for expressing love through pleasure through the body. It's that demand of expressing love through pleasure through the body that is the feminine equivalent of austerity and lack of consolation for the masculine. So you put women in a situation where if they won't participate, the fullness of energy, I mean, everyone else is dancing around, half naked, fully clothed, whatever it is, in their way, showing all these expressions, dancing wildly. So now you've got everyone dressed in the way that they're terrified to dress. But they are, and they're enjoying it, because just like a man thrives on that isolation, women thrive on wearing apple pie or pink teddies. I mean, it's like, once they do it, you know, but then it's like, yeah, and so there's openness. So now you begin to dance, and you're dancing with each other, which again is a way of flowing life force through your body. And you'll notice some women sitting there, you know, and you'll feel come on. And you'll all dance around her and massage her and open her until she's dancing with you, dancing opening. And then you'll just notice that one woman always dances in the exact same way. And she's unable to dance, say, fiercely. She has to dance like a little, you know, goody-goody princess girl or something. And you could feel she's holding back that kind of fierce tiger quality in her. So you just start growling with her and tigering with her, and she's like, stop, or whatever. And then you demand that tiger quality from you, not by going, give me that, you know, not the masculine demand, but the feminine demand of dancing it with her, to invoke it, to evoke, you know, say like, here, dance this, you know. And so the feminine grows in community, not in isolation. It grows in pleasure, not in pain. It grows through praise, not criticism. It grows through allowing so much energy to flow through your body that it completely opens you in the full spectrum of the rainbow. Now, that can only be done amongst women. Men have no part in that.